Welcome to Real Deal Recovery, where the focus is topic-based and centered on physical and emotional recovery from drugs and alcohol or any other self-destructive behavior. Here's your host, Stephen Gerrard.
Hello and welcome to Real Deal Recovery. The topic for this podcast is relationships outside of sponsorship, which is a great topic our guest came up with. We'll be joined by Jim, who's been clean and sober for quite some time, and we are dedicating this podcast to Jim's close friend, Jim A., who recently passed away with 50 years of sobriety. And my experience has been that when I got clean and sober and went through the steps and started to develop a relationship with myself, that had a positive spillover into all of my other relationships. And my experience has also been that the quality of my life is largely contingent on the quality of my relationships. So grateful to have Jim with us today. Jim, welcome to Real Deal Recovery.
Hi, good to be here.
So great to have you. Before we get to our topic, could you take us through some of the unmanageability you were experiencing prior to getting into recovery?
Yeah, sure. I was, I never really knew what was going to happen when I picked up a drink. Sometimes it would be fine and I'd have a good time. And other times I would wind up in a blackout and just do something completely dangerous and stupid, like get in my car and drive down the street the wrong way, get in some sort of altercation with girlfriend or people I liked, tear my apartment apart, punch holes in walls. It was just rolling the dice. And as, I got closer and closer to my bottom, that unmanageability, that, complete kind of Jekyll and Hyde just became more and more frequent, to the point where my final kind of straw was blacking out after having a couple of drinks with a friend of mine and waking up 4 or 5 hours later and tangled up in some blinds and having driven probably 30 miles in the process going to a home where my young nieces and nephews were sleeping. It was just crazy, and I forget about this part sometimes, but I got to the point where my voices in my head were so loud that I was screaming shut up to them in the middle of my kitchen.
How many years did this sort of unmanageability, this Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde unmanageability, how long had that been going on?
I mean, it was going on the whole time, but I had done a lot of things to kind of temper it. I would very good at kind of controlling what happened, controlling the drinks, drinking water in between, making sure I had, a safe ride lined up. But that became more and more work as it progressed. And then it also, the results were constantly changing where it just, as it got closer, just like these bad things just kept happening more frequently. So I basically started when I was 14 and I stopped when I was 28. But within those, within that time, at the last 2 years, say, I had already been 12 steps. So I kind of knew what was going on. And that's kind of horrible to know the knowledge. And then I was I'd graduated college, so I was kind of in the real world, and it's much different trying to function in the real world as a protected environment of living at home or going to college.
You said you were 28 when you got clean and sober. In that timeline of leaving school and that 28, when did that things really get out of hand in terms of the progression?
Certainly the last year was out of hand, and it was a combination of it being out of hand and me knowing that it was out of hand. So I was 12-stepped when I was 27, but just by an acting coach, and I did a dry stint, and during that dry stint, actually, things got worse for me. Just like the real self and came out. And then when I I started drinking again, and then it really just accelerated from there. That second after the dry, it was about a 6 month dry stint, and then I started to pick up again, trying to manage it, and just each time, you know, like I successfully, I would think I'd have one or two beers, but all my thoughts were around like that one or two beers for a week. You know, if I can make it to Sunday was kind of thing where then I'll have my one or two beers, and then I'd make it to that time like, okay, this is, I deserve this. And then next thing you know, like this animal would come out, you know, that, so it was about a year process. And really the last 6 months, I moved to San Francisco, in a sketchy neighborhood, and I just realized I was going down fast, you know, and I couldn't continue.
What was that definitive aha moment?
Well, that one time, you know, when I had that drink and I drinking with a friend, and then that blackout and kind of putting myself in danger, other people's lives in danger. That was a real aha moment. But it kind of sputtered out at the end. I just remember going out when I moved to San Francisco. I moved there December 1st, 1993. And actually, I'll tell you what the aha moment is. I'd forgotten about this. It was my last drink, and I had my girlfriend from college birthday was being celebrated at our house, and we'd already broken up, but we're still good terms. And so I went over to celebrate, and her brother-in-law put a glass of Chardonnay in my hand, and I had I was watching everyone else in the room. It was about 30 people in the room, and gauging where they were drinking with their drink so I could drink evenly with them. So it was just micro control of this last glass of wine, and to make sure, you know, that Mr. Jekyll didn't come out, or Mr. Hyde, I should say. And so I walked out of there. I successfully managed to have that one drink. And then I go out to my car, which was an old 1974 Porsche 914, these little Boxsters. And it was already unmanageable because the left side of the driver's side, the door was broken. So I couldn't get in on the driver's side. I had to go in through the passenger side and crawl over the stick shift to get in the car. And after I had left, thinking I had successfully, you know, managed to control my alcoholism, I went out to my car, and the passenger side had broken. And so I was sitting there with the keys in my hand, locked out of my car. And I just realized this is not working. I had to change something at that point.
It takes what it takes. You know, Jim, you came up with a really stellar topic for this podcast, and it's outside of outside of sponsorship. What were your relationships like prior to getting clean and sober?
They were very much one-dimensional. It was really about what can I get out of a person, or what kind of value. It was very self-centered, go figure. So it was very much who is this person, and what kind of meaning does they have in my life? Where are they on the social scale? That kind of thing. And they were very duplicitous. You know, it was hard for me to be kind of open and honest completely with anyone and on any level. So it was always, it was not being my true self to anyone. It was always kind of a seeing a partial of myself, and also, you know, what does this person bring to the table, and hiding other aspects of myself, so that being afraid of being judged, and also knowing that if I opened up, I would be, you know, they wouldn't like who I really was. So it was, I was very duplicitous. I was very much not honest in my relationships with other people. It was basically, what can I get? And I was really cut off from my emotions. And in a large way, for example, I lived with this woman for 3 years, and had a pretty intense relationship with her. But when it came to breaking up, it really didn't hit me until about 2-3 months after we broke up what had happened and what that and my emotions were just in a deep freeze, really. So I had no immediate emotional anything. You know, no, I was not able to be present in any way, shape, or form. I was always kind of outside looking in to my relationships. And I was never just in the moment, ever. And I was never kind of aware of what was going on when it was going on. You know, it was almost like watching a TV or something of myself. It was just, it was not being present. It was just kind of observing, but not even, I wasn't even smart enough for it to be observing. It was just kind of disconnected. It was completely disconnected is the best way to describe it.
You know, you've been clean and sober for a while now. How has going through the steps helped you to develop a relationship with yourself?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good one. It took a long time to kind of develop a relationship with myself. And it was just a lot of stripping away. I would say I did, you know, the four step a couple of times before it really, you know, the layers were kind of stripped away. And it was really step 6 and 7 that, you know, as it says in the books, kind of separates the men from the boys. And that was, I found that to be really true because my character defects were never truly removed from myself, but they were blatantly there. They were blatantly, like, I was completely aware of all my character defects. And so I truly had to kind of change that behavior within myself and the relationship with myself over that to be able to live with myself. And that's kind of gone on, you know, with the character of who I am, being comfortable with myself 99.9% of the time now, you know, just being okay with who I am. And that's kind of my gauge for living a happy life is when I'm okay with myself, then I am able to, I'm fine. You know, if I get outside of any kind of old behavior or what have you, I become so uncomfortable so fast, you know, and it becomes so much like it was before without even picking up a drink so quickly that I'm really able to kind of maintain and stay in the middle of the boat, so to stay, and be comfortable with myself. So a lot of things, like a lot of simple things happen. Like I'm a big person, you know, I weigh probably 210 pounds. I'm fairly kind of a muscular guy. And I wasn't even, I was trying so hard to be, you know, when I grew up in kind of mid, late 80s. I tried to be like a skinny rock star type of person, you know, and it just was not who I was at all. So one of the first things that happened was like, okay, I'm big, you know, I'm never going to be, you know, weigh 160 pounds. So why don't we just be okay with that? And so I was really okay with my body image quickly. Well, not quickly. I mean, it just took a while to be kind of like, okay, this is the kind of body I have. So, and physical exercise is kind of a big part of my life. I was no longer just obsessed with how much I weighed, for example, you know, which is, I guess, kind of a OA stuff, you know, and even the kind of food I ate. I was just became much more comfortable with that, you know, and that could go off. And I mean, that's just kind of one small example of how I became comfortable with myself. I became comfortable with my sexuality as well. And we won't necessarily go there, but, you know, I just became comfortable with, I'm dyslexic and the fact that, you know, it's still a little bit of a pain, but I'm like, okay, that's the way it is for me. You know, I'm too smart to spell a word just one way kind of thing. And so I just, you know, just a lot of acceptance really about who I am and what I bring to the table and being okay with that. And just being, even within the context of recovery, especially when I got sober in the early 90s, and it was huge in San Francisco recovery in the early 90s. And so you had kind of self-appointed gurus of, you know, like, if you want what I have, do what we do. And there's a certain point where I had to be like, okay, yeah, I'm not you're a nice person. I like what you are, but I don't necessarily want what you have exactly the way you have it. And that's not exactly who I am, you know? And so that was, again, just becoming kind of comfortable with myself in that model of even being different within AA, with a 12-step, and being okay with that, knowing that I still had a seat there, you know, I was still as welcome as anyone else was there because I earned it. You know, I had this, I earned my spot there, and no one could kick me out. And also kind of I had a big awakening with myself and my higher power. I've always been a little bit of an oddball. And, so initially in my recovery, there was some thinking that I needed to conform to things. And then I had this kind of realization that, like, no, I'm a little bit different, and that's the way I'm supposed to be. You know, because if everyone were the same, it would just be boring, you know. And so a lot of acceptance and relationship with myself is embracing my difference and embracing my dark side in some ways, which is really just kind of opposite of light, and being okay with all of that, that relationship with myself.
You know, you mentioned, Jim, that the seventh, you know, digging into the seventh step was a turning point for you in your recovery. Which character defects specifically, and how did you address them?
Oh, boy. Man. I was a bit of a – I was not always truthful in things. And so I was very – you know, if something was to my advantage, if, you know, I would – it was just very, very much kind of selfish. So kind of not having regards for other people, or just, you know, kind of manipulating stuff to my advantage. A lot of manipulation, really. I was really pretty skilled at that art of manipulation. And not thinking about consequences for other people, you know, or what that meant, or consequences for myself, really, because I'm really was... when I do that, I harm myself. But so, you know, I wasn't, I like to say I was not like, I was cash register honest. You know, if you hired me, I wasn't going to steal from the till or something like that. But in some ways, I was emotionally deceitful to a lot of different people, is the kind of way I was. And I was emotionally in just like a lot of different aspects of my life. I just was not honest in that way.
I don't want to take too many liberties here, but I wanted to ask you about the ninth step. How have your relationships changed as a result of the ninth step, or perhaps they have or have not? Could you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I did not owe a lot of money in my ninth step. It was most of my ninth step stuff was really about living amends, and just doing things differently. And so there was not a lot of kind of going up to people and saying, I'm sorry, or, you know, I stole this or something and that, or I owe you that. It was really about just being a better person. And continually to be a better person, and to be, I hate to say of service, but, you know, just to be, to bring something to the party, and not be such a taker is kind of a better way to put it for me. I did have, for instance, the girlfriend I had, you know, we did kind of come around, you know, kind of heal those wounds that we had from, after living together for 3 years, and that was really great. And then relationships with my parents you know, just my whole family improved tremendously. So it wasn't, you know, again, it wasn't just kind of continuing to look for ways to see, you know, take advantage of them or what have you. It's really just kind of showing up and being with them. Certainly my friendships in general just rocketed, you know, just really rocketed into, and most of the kind of closer friendships I've had have come since I got sober. I'm still in touch with a lot of people I've, you know, I used to drink with and that kind of thing, but we just follow different paths. So, you know, we're not necessarily see that each other that much, but the relationships I've formed in sobriety, and some have been like, you know, sober relationships, people I've gotten sober with or done service with and that kind of thing. But just in general, the type of relationships I have, you know, it's just very reciprocal type of thing, where we both kind of feed each other on one level or another. And that's like hugely important to me that, you know, I'm giving them whatever it is they need, you know, on some level. I hate to, being of service is like a really easy thing to say, but it's kind of like, you know, I'm bringing something to the table. I'm bringing and vice versa. And so by being together, this relationship that we have together, then we're both benefiting on it from it. You know, whether it's a romantic relationship, whether it's a friend relationship, whether it's a work relationship, you know, on all different levels is kind of, it's very reciprocal. And that is so hugely important to me now.
You know, recently you lost a very close friend, Jimmy, and we're dedicating this podcast to him. Before I let you go, I wanted to ask you this one last question. What meaning did your relationship with Jim bring to your life?
Wow. Yeah, that's a tough, it's not a tough one. It's just an emotional one. So Jim, I had met him very early in my sobriety, and I always remember the first thing that kind of impressed me was there was a meeting we used to go to at Tuesday Young People's in San Francisco at Union and Steiner. And at the very end, they read a vision for you out of the book. And we were kind of holding hands as we do at the end of a meeting. And I was right next to Jim holding his hand, and they read a vision for you. And then we did, you know, a quick prayer. I think it must have been it wasn't the Our Father prayer, but the Serenity prayer. And at the end, Jim made this comment that said, oh, the only part of the book that ever made any sense to me. And at that moment, I just realized, like, wow, this is, here's somebody. I connected into me. It was just like, okay, so he didn't quite get it all as well. And here's someone who he'd already had at least 25 years at the time, you know, so he just really coming from a place of, yeah, I really don't know it all the answers either. And, but I'm just keep showing up. And, you know, he was just a person just kept showing up. And, he ended up, moving into my neighborhood, in Hayes Valley in San Francisco. And he used to be out there walking his two dogs in the neighborhood, and I would kind of catch up with him and we'd have a friendly little chat. Certainly saw him at lots of meetings, and it was just, you know, it was a, well, I've been sober for 23 years. So it was a 23 year relationship of, fellow in recovery, of neighbor, and of just, you know, really super nice guy. And really seeing him go through kind of the trials and tribulations of life, both financial, I would say, and health-wise in the end. And, you know, and just the sweetest guy in the world. And just, so he was never a sponsor to me, but he was just a pillar of being a good person in the world and having a good heart. And it's just the kind of thing that, you know, I feel sorry for a lot of people who don't have kind of access to that. I think in our society, is certainly where I live in San Francisco these days, you know, you just you don't really have access to older people who or, you know, just life experience people. We're also separated now by technology and everything else. And there's just not a lot of opportunities anymore unless you're in kind of a 12-step program or even a church program or something like that where you can go and just interact with these people and form these relationships that last years, you know, just that truly last years. And every time you see the person, you're just very happy to see them, you know, or you might even you know they're going to be somewhere. Like it's very certain probability that Jim would be at this Union and Steiner meeting on Tuesdays and Friday nights. And so, you know, kind of my decision process would be, okay, what am I going to do with my Tuesday night? Ah, you know, Jim, I know Jim will be at that meeting, so at least I'll get to chat with him for a little bit. So that kind of thing, you know, it was just an amazing thing to see. And he touched so many different people's lives, you know, men and women, by just being kind of a pillar of responsibility and of goodness.
Well, Jim, you mentioned technology separating us, but this podcast is technology. And
yeah.
You were able to take your great message, which was really positive, inspiring today around the world. And I want to thank you for that.
Sure. Thank you. And thank you for putting this together. This is an amazing thing. And it's a good example of how technology can bring people together as well. So it's I really appreciate you doing this. And it's interesting to see, you know, it be technology putting to good, such good use. So thank you.
Stephen Gerrard is available for sober coaching and consulting by visiting SoberCoachNYC.com, offering additional support, guidance, and motivation for people in all phases of recovery. Just visit SoberCoachNYC.com. That's SoberCoachNYC.com to set up a complimentary life-changing discussion. Make a decision to change your life.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. If you find this content of value and you'd like to have the podcast delivered directly to your device, please rate, review, and subscribe over on iTunes. This way, each new pod will be delivered directly to you and you won't have to go looking for it. We have some new blogs that may be of interest to you, and you can find those over at www.realdealrecoverypod.com. If you'd like to get a hold of me for any reason, or you'd like to suggest a topic, or if you have any questions pertaining to recovery, you can reach me directly at realdealrecoverypodcast@gmail.com. That's realdealrecoverypodcast@gmail.com. Thanks again for tuning in. And remember, recovery is not a spectator sport. Get in the ring.